You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Culture Map presents What's Eric Eating? From the Gal Media Studios in Houston, Texas, here's Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. I'll be joined by Ian Tucker and Dominic Lee from Poutine in a little bit, but first, I'm joined this week by a new co-host, but a familiar voice, Rebecca Masson, the chef owner of Fluff Bake Bar in Midtown. Becky, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Let's dive right into the news of the week, starting with a little news in River Oaks District. Taverna is gone, and it's going to be replaced by a new concept called Bisou, from the owners of Clay and Spire, the very popular Midtown nightclubs. They have joined up with Frederick Perrier, the successful French chef behind Ara Brasserie, Hogs and Chicks, and a whole bunch of other restaurants out in Fort Bend County. The basic spin is that they're calling this a continental restaurant, not a French restaurant, despite having a French chef and a French name. Maybe because they don't want to be seen as competing directly with Toulouse, the French restaurant that is already in River Oaks District. Becky, I have to say I'm a little bit confused because I'm not 100% sure what continental cuisine is. And I can't think of a Houston restaurant that serves it since the place in Midtown whose name I can't think of off the top of my head just closed.
I can't even, you know, I'm in Midtown. I can't even think of who that.
Yeah, Johann Schuster's place. It's going to be. This is what I get for not doing enough show prep. But but anyway, continental cuisine in River Oaks District from French chef Frederick Perrier. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I can't even imagine the rent in that place. As someone who's, you know, playing the real estate game, trying to find things. Continental cuisine. I guess it will span continents.
It's mostly European, right?
Mostly
European. It's kind of,
okay.
It's kind of French with touches of Italian and maybe a little bit of German. I'm not 100% sure how it all comes together, but
I mean, I can see like the French and the Italian kind of crossing paths with the, you know, the Romance languages and the romantic food, but German's a little harsh and bland.
Well, and so here's the other thing, of course, since the owners are the owners of nightclubs.
Yeah, that's
two very successful nightclubs. They're going to have like a DJ on the weekends and stuff and stay open a little later.
Yeah, maybe that'll work for that area. I mean, you've got the movie theater that probably gets out pretty late and people want to look for a small bite or a glass of wine to end the evening.
Right. Or even if they're coming out of Steak 48 and they're not quite ready to wrap up the night, like they may want to, you know, have a cocktail and something else. These kind of clubsterants have been popular like in New York and L.A. We don't really have that here. I mean, the closest kind of C&B scene thing that we do is like when Mastro's is really humming or I mean, but even B19 is like
that's a scene.
A restaurant. It's
yeah.
a scene, but it's still
a scene,
very
it's still
much
a
restaurant.
Restaurant. Yeah, you're not bringing in the DJ. I don't know. I sometimes feel like when I look at restaurants that maybe bring in a DJ at brunch or try to do a theme or something like that, it's usually because we're not getting enough people in the door, so let's do something gimmicky to get them in. You know, but for me personally, I don't like that, you know, music while I'm trying to enjoy dinner. Like, it's just, it's already loud in restaurants enough. Like, you don't need to add that. I want to go to a rave feeling as well.
Yeah, I mean, I am not a nightclub goer, but I kind of respect what they've accomplished with both Clay and Spire.
Well, that's true. But I don't foresee, like, those people in Midtown that frequent those nightclubs, like, oh, let's go over to the River Oaks and eat dinner and play nightclub. I think it's an either-or kind of thing.
It in Houston, it typically has been. I don't know if, like, the tourists that come through the Galleria area might want something, like, a little bit stepped up. There really are no true nightlife options near the Galleria.
That's true, yeah.
So I have this kind of, I'll be curious to see how this pans out. Frederick Perrier certainly knows what he's doing in the kitchen, so I think the food's going to be...
The food will be delicious.
Yeah, I think the food will be good. And then it's just, you know, the atmosphere is kind of the open question. But it's all going to happen pretty fast. I mean, there's targeting a September opening date.
I mean, maybe, you know, you think back of, like, the La Strada days, the La Strada brunches, you know. I never went to one, but I lived in the area.
They were fun. They had their place.
They had their place, right. So maybe, like, on the weekends, maybe that's fine. And then during the week, those of us that want to go have a nice dinner from Frederick can enjoy it.
That's right. I'll be there strictly, you know, Monday through Thursday, and I'll leave the weekends to other people.
Exactly.
All right. Let's move on. A Houston restaurant attracted national attention last week. International Smoke, the new barbecue place that is a joint venture between celebrity chef Michael Mina and lifestyle icon Ayesha Curry, attracted a swarm of negative Yelp reviews from angry Rockets fans who are upset that Ayesha's husband, Steph, beat the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. There is no clearer break between my Gal Media colleagues who host sports talk radio shows and my perspective than this particular issue. They all thought it was funny. I thought it was kind of shameful that Houstonians would do this. My advice to Rockets fans is don't go 0-27 from 3 in a game 7 at home if you want to be salty about, if you want to be angry about anything that happened in that series against the Warriors. That's what I would be angry about.
Yeah. I mean, Steph Curry didn't win the game. The Warriors won the game, right? And you know how I feel about Yelp. I mean, we could go on and on about this one.
Well, that's kind of why I brought this up, because you have your own relationship with Yelp reviews. What did we look up? You're like the number 3 destination for coconut cream pie.
Yes. Oh, I am. Yeah. So now,
even though you've never made coconut, never sold coconut cream pie.
Right. And I'm number 8 in cannolis, which we all learned. My favorite was Terry from Anvil told me they are number 4 to ride a mechanical bull. That's amazing.
I mean, I was just at Anvil last night. I did not see a mechanical bull.
Maybe it's like a secret room, you know, the secret knock kind of thing.
Yeah, there's like that secret upstairs, right, where they...
Yeah, there's the mechanical bull up there.
That's where the mechanical bull is. So, yeah, I don't... And, of course, Yelp is, like, you know, monitoring the reviews, and they're going to delete all the junk that's...
Yeah,
they don't
do a very good job of that.
Too spicy curry and Kevin Durant and all this kind of nonsense, but...
You know, here's my feeling. Like... I'm super excited to have the restaurant in town. I think it's going to be a tasty place. It's a little far from me, but, you know, I think sports fans need to get their panties out of a wad, because, like, it's not her husband that won that game. It was the Warriors that won that game. It was the Rockets that didn't play. Like, that's who you need to be upset with, not his wife, who probably is like me and has nothing to do with sports ball on a major, you know, on a daily basis. You know, she's creating a brand with Michael Mina, and it's totally separate from what her husband does.
Well, and you know, your friend and mine, E.J. Miller, who worked at Riel and Salter Seafood Kitchen and all these places, is going to be the executive chef of International Smoke. And I'm really excited to eat there, because I don't feel like E.J. would have signed on to something like this if it wasn't going to be really good.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've talked to E.J. a couple of times. He's super excited about it. Yeah, it's so stupid to go on Yelp and do these 1-star reviews about this. It's this. You see the same thing happening with the baker in Denver, because the Supreme Court, you know, awarded in his favor, that he has the religious right to refuse to make this wedding cake. It's the same thing. All you're doing is wasting your time. And as I've called people on, like, I've responded to people, and I'm like, you're just being a negative Nancy behind a keyboard. You're not brave. You're not strong. You're not coming out, coming forth. I mean, if you guys go stand in front of an international smoke and protest, I'll give you a little more power, a little more credit. But you can't walk up. Like, Nate, I'll put a bet out. Like, I will bet that no one will walk up to Ayesha Curry at the opening and be like, your restaurant sucks because your husband beat us. Right?
No, of course. It would be, that would be completely absurd.
It's just like when I have said to people, I can't fix your problem when you go home and be a negative Nancy behind a keyboard. If you came up to me and said, I don't like this Oreo, it's too salty, I go, okay, no problem, I get it. Let's find you something you like.
Right, here's your $3 back and try the chocolate chips.
Yeah, like there are over 50 different selections in my bakery. If you don't like something, tell me. Now, if you don't like me, that's a whole other issue we have. And my feeling is you don't come to Fluff Bake Bar to see me. You come to see what we do there. And if you think I'm standing in the kitchen and I look angry and you call it the resting bitch face, right? Like, that's my work face. Like, I'm concentrating hard because baking is not easy to make you something nice. Don't assume you know me.
Right, and don't assume that you're necessarily going to smile at everybody or be smiling while you're working. It's just a whole thing with the way people use Yelp, because speaking from my own experience, it's actually kind of hard to write about what food tastes like and to be articulate about what you do or don't like about a dish you were served at a restaurant. It's much easier to comment on the waiter was mean to me, or he didn't refill my water fast enough, or the valet was too expensive. Or the owner looked pissed off when she was making
Have any parking. That's not my problem. Call the city of Houston. Right. You know, I have to say, for me, lately, we've gotten a lot of really nice reviews. And a lot of it is because people aren't, like, I don't go out front anymore. I don't talk to people anymore. And when I do, it's someone I know or someone that is a regular or, you know, someone has a question. But other than that, it's my staff that goes out there. And yeah, every once in a while they get a review that they were glaring at the customer and they couldn't, just because they couldn't decide what they wanted. I mean, I was like, okay, or you should be as sweet as the cookies you make. I'm like, oh, well, they're not that sweet. So,
no, they're very balanced. Yeah. All right, let us move on.
Yeah. This could be a whole hour.
We'll do like a round table with you and I don't know, maybe we'll get Justin Burrow in from Bad News. I know Yelp's one of his favorites too.
And Ben from Petrol.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But I do want to move on. Otto's Barbecue and Hamburgers, which is a bona fide Houston institution that had been on Memorial Drive since 1951, closed in 2010, and is now kind of relegated to downtown food courts and office buildings. They're making a comeback. They have submitted plans to the city of Houston. They're going to open a brand new, like, 3,300 square foot restaurant on Durham Drive, just south of Washington Avenue.
Wait, is that near FM?
It is near FM Kitchen. More important, it's right next. It's where Luke's Ice House used to be and is now an empty plot. It's next to that Fuego bar.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, but a lot has changed in Houston barbecue since Otto's was on Memorial. Truth Barbecue from Brenham is about to open.
Oh, I can't wait.
JJ is back at Beaver's doing a little bit of barbecue. Last week's guests, John and Veronica Avila, are serving barbecue at Henderson and Kane in the old Sixth Ward. And, of course, there's Gatlin's and Pinkerton's and all kinds of new barbecue options. So the question is, what does a historically beloved barbecue joint have to do to introduce itself to a new generation of customers?
Oh, they're going to have to come out of the gate swinging, like, huge. I don't know. I mean, I moved here, in 07? I had a burger there once. I never had any of their barbecue.
It's George Bush's favorite barbecue joint.
Well, There you go. That's a little something something.
Oh, yeah. It counts for something.
Yeah. I just think they need to make a big splash, you know, like say, hey, guess what? We were doing this before and now we're back. And I mean, we've been doing it in the tunnels and this and that, but here we are. We're here to stay. And this is what we do. And I think they're maybe the benefit of having been on Memorial before and then now in the tunnels, they have a following. And so I think they just need to figure out how to catch those new followers.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to kind of reintroduce themselves, connect with the new generation of diners, and be relevant in a part of the city that can be kind of tough for restaurants. It can be very up and down. I think FM Kitchen's off to a pretty strong start. Max's Wine Dive has done very well in that area, but you know, Molina's just closed. You know, there's a historically popular restaurant. Molina's closed their Washington Avenue location, so it can be tough.
Yeah, and I think too with there's all those like young. I'm gonna call them young professional bars, like those kids that go blow off steam Friday and Saturday night. So it's kind of a weird little corridor. But, I mean, you can look at, like, you know, obviously El Tiempo's been there forever. Max's has been there forever. El Rey has been there forever. So hopefully, I think having FM kind of be there and set the pace, like set the tone for that area is big and helpful.
Yeah, and I think that FM has gotten off, you know, they're a year in now and they're off to a nice strong start. I think that bodes well for the idea that a new concept can come in and get some attention and build some momentum because it has been a tough go. That area has been a tough go for some places.
Yeah, I see that. What was there? BRC?
BRC, Dunzo. Federal Grill's still holding on over there.
There's something over there in BRC now, right?
Yeah, it's called Doberman's, and I have not been. I can't tell if it's a bar or a restaurant, but I haven't. I'm kind of waiting for someone to tell me, like, hey, it's pretty good. You should try it. And if you are that person and you're listening, ERIC, Eric at culturemap.com, drop me an email and let me know or tweet me or Instagram message me or whatever. I have not made it to Doberman's yet.
Yeah. And then that little Woodrow's has been there for a good set.
Yep. Yeah. Remember when that was a silly wine bar?
There's been a couple silly wine bars on that corridor. It's so weird when you don't take those routes anymore. Like, you don't drive that direction anymore. Right. And then all of a sudden you drive through and you're like, wait, what's...
Eh. Right. Where is this? Where did this come from?
Yeah.
All right. And then finally, since you're here, what's new at Fluff Bake Bar?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we have so many fun bake sales coming up. We kind of were on hiatus there for a hot minute because I had to go travel a little bit.
Yes, you went to all of the food festivals.
Not all of them, but the good ones. How's that?
Fair enough.
We're starting off this weekend with Anthony Caleo. We've got Brandon Silva coming. We've got Ben Rabini, Jonathan Levine, Brian Moses from Olive and June in Austin. And then I'm so excited. My girl Kelly Fields from Willa Jean in New Orleans, she's doing the Thursday night takeover in July. So it's July 12th. You can just come between 6 and 9 and order a la carte. It's so good.
Yeah, that's your new fun dinner series. Instead of formal, seated, plated, multi-course meals,
People
can just buy a couple of a la carte items for 10 to 15 bucks and get a nice presentation from a guest chef.
Yeah, it's super fun. It's truly a pop-up from these chefs. We've pulled a lot from outside of Houston, but we're kind of sticking in. So sometimes we might have two a month. We're sticking in some local chefs because it's been kind of like they've kind of approached me and said, wait, I want to do this. St. Arnold's teamed up with us, so they bring something fun. And there's a guest chef table that a total of 8 people can sit out throughout the night, and we put those up. You can reserve your spot. It's way more relaxed and I think more accessible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Way more affordable, way more accessible, way more convenient. And we should say Willa Jean is like this really great bakery cafe in New Orleans.
It's got
a whole bunch of national press.
So much. Kelly was the pastry chef at August for Eons, and which is part of the John Besh Group, and she ventured out on her own with the help of that company. And Willa Jean's just been a hit. Like, Beyonce loves to eat there when she's in town. And she even called Kelly once to tell her. Kelly said she was just relaxing on the couch, and she's like, hey, this is Beyonce. And Kelly's like, no.
That's not like one of those, like, when the president calls you, it's like, hold for the president. It's not like hold for Beyonce and then Beyonce pops on the line.
I wonder. I don't know. She just kind of was so excited. She just spit it out. But that would be kind of awesome.
That would be kind of awesome.
Yeah. I think she has a secret door now at Willa Jean.
I think Beyonce can have a secret door to any restaurant she wants.
I'm pretty sure.
All right. That does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So, Becky, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk about the dinner we had at La Vista 101. This is the new Lazy Brook Timber Grove reimagining of La Vista, which for almost 20 years was a very popular BYOB restaurant in Briar Grove. It is no longer BYOB. The chef owner, Greg Gordon, has hired J.D. Woodward, who had been at Southern Goods and Underbelly back in the day, and Goro and Gunn to run the kitchen. And Jeb Stewart, formerly of Cultivare, is the general manager. We had, I would say, a pretty good dinner. Let me kind of start in the beginning, kind of walking in. What was your first impression of the space?
The space is nice. I thought maybe it was fancier than I was dressed, but then I quickly realized I was okay. Very welcoming when you came in. I felt like I was kind of in this, like, I hate to say this, but it was like a neighborhood Applebee's kind of thing, but it wasn't at corporate. Does that make sense?
Well,
like that friendly,
that is to a certain extent what they're going for. I mean, La Vista was a very beloved neighborhood restaurant, and La Vista 101 wants to be kind of the new generation of that very welcoming, very friendly neighborhood restaurant. So I think that's on par. The only thing is, you know, Carl Eves did the design. He did the design for Alice Blue. You can definitely see some common touches between the two of them, some of the patterns, the elevated booths. Greg did get a little bit of his personality. There's some skull wallpaper.
Yes.
A couple other touches. Really, the only other thing walking in was just that it is very loud in there.
Oh, my God. It is so loud. I think at one point, like, the waiter, like, walked away, and I just looked at you, and I go, I have no idea what he said.
I heard about half of his spiel. And we did talk to JD about that afterwards. He said that they're bringing in a sound guy to kind of add some material to the ceilings and kind of tame that. But it was really, like, in terms of the atmosphere and the design, that was really the only negative, was just how loud it
was. I feel like if you come there more than two or three times, they're going to know your name.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So, like, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, everybody likes to be recognized.
Yes. And then we looked over the menu. We had a warm tomato Caprese salad.
Yeah.
We had a roasted octopus. We had the filet with the bone marrow butter. We had a couple of veggie sides. We had shishito peppers and carrots.
Oh, and the carbonara.
Yes, and the spaghetti carbonara. I will say, props to JD, because they're curing their own guanciale for that carbonara. That is a very unusual step in Houston restaurants.
Yeah, that was... it was, you know, I'm spoiled by Brandy Key's carbonara at the original Copa Restaurante, and we discussed that with the Parmesan cream, and it just seemed a little extravagant. But to me, it was so good, and it was so rich, and I liked having that interaction with my food of stirring in the egg and the cream. The guanciale was just a touch salty for me.
Yeah, it was maybe skewed a little bit salty, but I thought the flavors were good and the pasta was really nicely cooked.
The pasta was very nicely cooked.
They're onto something with that. I want to talk about the dishes we liked before we talk about the dishes we didn't like And I think the favorite was that octopus with the hummus and the flatbread.
Yes. It was so nice to find. It was, you know, I never thought to put hummus and za'atar and sumac with octopus. I don't cook, so there you go. But I think it was a nice, fresh approach to, like, the grilled octopus dish.
Yeah, we've seen grilled octopus on just about every menu. But this is a fresh take on it, and that hummus is having a moment. You know, Dominic Lee's got a great one on the poutine menu. I'll be talking to him about that in a little bit. But hummus is definitely having a moment. And JD said that the octopus is like their number one seller. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's nice. And then I'm not usually a big filet person, but
oh my God,
that so bone good. Marrow butter was very decadent. And very
what
delicious.
Did they call it? The beef, the bone, and the bread?
I think that's right, yes.
Yeah. And so we spread the bone marrow on the filet, and then it was cute. They, like, came out with the little bone and pulled it off, so the bone marrow butter was already starting melting. I'm a sucker for meat butter like that. So that just kind of took that very simple filet just to another level.
Yeah, and then I'd say I thought the sides were fine. I mean, shishito peppers, we've all had that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the carrots were good. I took the leftover carrots home.
Yeah, they were great. I'm not sure how I felt about the tzatziki with the shishitos. I just didn't like...
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you could do something else with that.
Right. I'd say the only dish that really missed for me was that tomato caprese. I mean, we're in the height of summer. Tomatoes are in season.
Yeah.
You know, heating them up just kind of doesn't do much for the texture. And then like, I don't know that I want that cheese, like, melted and gooey. I think I want it. I want that burrata as its kind of regular
self.
Yeah.
I think if he'd gone, like, maybe one step further with, like, a tomato confit, like a combination of, like, fresh tomatoes, tomato confit. I love a good tomato confit. Like, kind of mixed it up a little bit and then kept the cheese the room temperature it should be, then I think that dish would have been a whole different ball game. But those warm tomatoes, just no.
Yeah. And then I know you had a couple of glasses of wine from Jeb's Wine List. What did you think of his selections?
It's pink and it's sparkling. No, it was tasty. Yeah. You know, I usually go from like one sparkling to like maybe one glass of like a light red or something, but it was tasty. I had two. I'm not going to lie. It was a long day.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a very affordable, very eclectic wine list. I know Jeb's probably having to do a little bit of hand selling, you know, trying to get people.
We did see that. We saw him giving samples to people, which was kind of cool to see. Like, he's trying to educate a neighborhood that just wants their glass of cab, you know.
Yeah, trying to mix it up a little bit. I would be very curious to know if Mark Burrell is having like a similar challenge at Rainbow Lodge, or if that place is just so traditional. It's just like, you know, Chardonnay, sling the cabs and don't sweat it.
I think Mark Burrell's really trying to push the Bandol. That's like his favorite region. So, but it's nice to see, you know, you know, I dated a somm for 5 years. I never knew what I liked because it was always ordered for me. So to go into a restaurant that maybe is kind of this neighborhood casual place, and to see someone like Jeb Stuart there puts me at ease, and it excites me because I know I'm going to get something good to drink and learn a bit about it.
Yeah, and I had a Sazerac that I really liked. I mean, those can skew bitter and boozy with the absinthe and the whiskey, but this was very nicely balanced. I was happy with it. And then we had a coconut cream pie for dessert.
I need a little more coconut pastry cream and I'll be happy.
Yeah, I think that was the only thing, is it was a lot of whipped cream on top, not as much pastry cream in the middle.
The crust was nice.
The crust was very nice. That is a La Vista classic. And that really has been the only interesting feedback that I've seen online, is that people who went to the Briargrove restaurant for 20 years are very frustrated by the new restaurant because there's basically no overlap between the two menus, and they're very frustrated. And my only message to those people would be, judge the new restaurant on its own terms.
Right. Try something
new. Kind of embrace it for what it is. And I think it's possible to have a pretty good meal there. And honestly, we didn't spend a ton of money.
I don't think so, no.
I mean, we were what? We were at about $120.
I think so, yeah.
With the cocktails and the wine and the dessert and the apps and everything, so, yeah.
My parents went there the week before. I didn't know that, Mr. and Mrs. Wilson. And they sat at the bar, and they had nothing but good things to say as well, so.
Yeah, and if you went in and split a pizza, an appetizer and a pizza and a couple glasses of wine, you'd be out for probably $50.
Yeah. They said the pizza was excellent.
Okay, well, that was... We were trying to balance our carbs, so we we went pasta, not pizza. But yeah. I would happily go back for the pizza. I would happily go back for some of the seafood preparations on the entree side. And I've been a fan of JD's cooking since he took over the kitchen at Goro and Gunn. I'm excited to see him get this opportunity with Jeb and with Greg, who are two absolute. Industry veterans who've kind of been there, done that, seen it all. And, I think La Vista is a really nice addition to Lazy Brook Timber Grove. It can pull from Oak Forest. It can pull from Garden Oaks.
Yeah.
Heights people should check it out. It's a solid addition.
I mean, Rainbow Lodge has been there forever and doing so well, so I can't imagine that these guys won't as well. And I like it. It's, 2 or 3 miles from my house. I'm in Oak Forest, so... We always welcome something new to eat in the hood.
Yeah, and then brunch and lunch are coming. So
brunch will be amazing. Yeah. I think brunch will be busy, busy.
Yeah. All right, so that puts a pin in La Vista 101. Becky, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Plug the website, plug your Instagram, all that stuff.
We have our website. It's fluffbakebar.com. It's all brand new and shiny thanks to the 5+8 folks. We are on Instagram and Twitter at Fluff Bake Bar, and I think Facebook is Fluff Houston. What else do we got? You can follow me if you want a little more snark. I'm at Sugar Fairy on Instagram. I'm really bad at the Twitters, people.
Nobody cares about Twitter anymore. You're fine.
Yeah, the only time I'm on Twitter is when I have to defend my business.
But that is a topic for another show. And I will be right back with Dominic Lee and Ian Tucker.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
Our interview this week is brought to you by Eighth Wonder Brewery, one of my favorite local breweries, conveniently located in East Downtown. It's been really fun to watch Eighth Wonder evolve from its sort of humble beginnings in a little corner of a warehouse to now a gigantic warehouse, the huge backyard that they call Wonder World, where you can go before sports games, especially with soccer season and baseball season heating up. Eighth Wonders Brewery is conveniently located within walking distance. You might see my colleague Fred Fowler walking around there. I know it's a favorite spot of his. And there's always something new to try at Eighth Wonder. Like, they just released their Procrastinator Session IPA, the official beer of doing nothing. They're going to have their hip-hop series rolling out here in the next little bit. And, you know, you can always count on an Eighth Wonder beer to be refreshing, delicious, and fresh because it's made right here locally all the time. So thank you to Eighth Wonder, and here's our interview of the week. I'm joined this week by Ian Tucker and Dominic Lee from Putchine Restaurant, newly opened in Sawyer Yards. Ian, I'm going to start with you. How close did I come to pronouncing that correctly?
That was perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Excellent. Dominic, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Dominic, since I've had Ian on the show before, I want to start with you. I always like to kind of start with how people got into the restaurant business. What made you want to be a professional chef?
Oh, I love to eat. This is an easy answer. You know, I just like to eat and I love food. And it's just like an ongoing culture thing with food. You can always learn and you can go from different parts from around the world. And you have just all these different experiences and flavors and techniques and everything. So it's always learning and always eating and enjoying food. It's just one of my favorite things. And it just made me want to be in the job, have that as a job, you know.
And then I met you a couple years ago when you were working as the sous chef at Karen's.
Yeah.
How did you make your way to Houston?
So originally, I just wanted to come to chef school in Houston because I was looking at, when I was researching all the different chef schools around the U.S., You know, there's Johnson & Wales, there's the French Culinary Institute in New York, and all these different schools. And the Art Institute of Houston stood out because of the way their curriculum was designed, as far as it had all these different world cuisines as a class. So you would go to, like, Asian cuisine, and it would be a class. Or each one had a specific time frame and quarter length of just focusing on that cuisine. So because, as I said, I like all the cultures, I just came to Houston to go to the Art Institute, and that's how I ended up here.
And then I want to – I'll get to the decision to come to Poutine in just a minute, but
yeah.
How was what was it like working for Karen?
I love Chef Karen. That's the easy way of me saying it. The first time I met Chef Karen was at the Texas Restaurant Association, and a chef that I worked for was her sous chef. And he told me, he said, it's the most amazing experience. You learn about spices and everything. And I sent her a message that asked her if I could come stage. And that's when she was moving out of her old restaurant. She was like, absolutely not. I'm not having any stages. I'm not having anyone in the restaurant at all. I don't even want to talk to you. And so I met her at the Texas Restaurant Association, and I said, hey, like, I just walked up to her and I said, hey, you know, I wanted to learn about Indian cuisine, but you told me absolutely not. Like, is there any chance that I can learn about Indian cuisine? I just wanted to work for her for free. And she said, actually, I'm looking for a chef. And so I showed up at her house. I went to her house and I cooked with her and cooked for her. And she showed me the plans for the new restaurant. And then I helped her to go from there. Yeah. And it was great. Great experience.
And then, Ian, as you were putting together the team for Poutine, how did you meet Dominic, and how did you kind of decide that he was the person to lead the kitchen?
I just heard quite a bit about Dominic through people in town. Obviously, at that time, I'd only been here a couple of years, so I was still kind of getting to know people in the business and in the industry. And the few people I did know, Dominic's name just kept cropping up every time I asked them about chefs kind of looking to take that next step. That I didn't want someone that was like already established, if you know what I mean, in like an executive head chef role. I wanted someone who was like young and eager and hungry and wanted to take that next step and was ready for the challenge. So yeah, he was just recommended to me, and then I through a friend of a friend I got his phone number and just cold called him, and he didn't answer. I left a voicemail, just said, hey, I'm a Irish guy in town looking to open a restaurant. I'd love to talk to you about the position. And then he called me back.
That was an interesting message that I listened to on a voicemail. Let y'all know, like, I was like, you know, one of those voice messages you get when you listen to it and then you look at the phone afterwards,
right?
Yeah. That was one of those scenarios.
So you met with Ian. What about the opportunity appealed to you and made it seem like it was the right next step?
Well, truthfully, when you come before someone and they tell you, hey, I want to build a restaurant, and then they say, you can design the kitchen, and the only parameter that I have is that the food has explosive flavors. It is, so in my mind, when I hear that, is there are no parameters. You kind of can't get away from that. You know, that's basically like telling you got a license to kill. That you can do whatever you want. You know, like, that's I'm sorry, James Bond reference. I love James Bond.
So. No. I'm great with James Bond references.
Yeah. So in my mind, that is definitely, you know, the first thing is means that I get to cook all the things that I've been thinking about the way that I want to cook them. And as a chef, that just means that you get to express your creativity on the level in which you would like to.
Yeah. And what I think about Poutine is that it is such an interesting menu. It is so eclectic. Just, you know. Things we would expect, roasted oysters,
yes,
chicharrón, yes, seems to be very trendy. But then, like, you're serving that hummus with pulled lamb neck that I feel like has been kind of like one of those, like, dishes that people keep talking about. Could you just tell me a little bit about how you developed that dish? Because it seems to be kind of the breakout hit.
So the hummus itself was just coming up with something that you think people would want to sit down and use as, like, what a chef once told me would be like the chips and salsa of the restaurant. So one of my chef instructors like always asked me that question, like, what's going to be your chips and salsa? And so when thinking of, you know, an eclectic menu and the Mediterranean and the Middle East, you think about chickpeas. At least I think about chickpeas. But I wanted to make a hummus that wasn't the same as you get the hummus from the store and it's kind of granulated and like really thick. And I wanted to actually be able to manipulate the hummus from the very beginning. So by buying dried chickpeas or different types of dried chickpeas and using them to make the hummus and cooking them yourself, you can mess with all of the flavors all the way through. So it gives you that form of, you know, really control of something that seems so simple, but that can become so complex. And then when I was making the lamb neck dish, I just said, well, you know what? I just want to put some of this lamb neck inside of this hummus, and we just want to go with that, you know? And then it's developed, you know, just like as last time you joined us, like now I have people taking pork skins and dipping them in the hummus as well.
I think it's such a no-brainer. I mean, I don't know how anyone can look at those two dishes and not think, oh, like these are two great tastes that would taste great together.
Yeah.
And then, Ian, I mean, in the press materials for the restaurant, it said that this is kind of inspired by a restaurant you own in Dublin called the Exchequer.
Correct.
In what ways is Poutine like the Exchequer, and in what ways is it different?
I mean, inspired by the Exchequer, in just in terms of the, I guess, the ambience and the overall mix of offerings. So, like, very much, we keep telling everybody we're not a bar that does food, and we're not a restaurant with a bar in it. We're very much a bar and restaurant, and we want to promote both sides of it very well. And similar to the Exchequer in Dublin, I think we designed it in such a way that it fits together. We've got like high table areas, bar seats at the counter, lots of beautiful dining tables. So it more kind of the flow and the feel of it is similar to the Exchequer.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about Poutine is that it really is a cocktail bar style cocktail program.
Yes.
Lots of choices. I mean, you have a drink with a rose frozen in an ice cube. I mean,
correct.
That's a pretty fancy addition.
And our smoked old fashioned, which is kind of in the bar program, becoming the hummus of the bar program, I think.
Well, yeah, because it comes out in a smoky, like a smoke filled bottle, and
yeah,
it just seems like one of those things where once one table orders it, all the other tables around it see it and are like, oh yeah, we want that.
Correct. Table. That's the idea. Yeah, that's what we want.
How do you sort of feel about, I mean, you guys are a little over a month in. How are you sort of feeling about things so far?
Great. Yeah, it's gone really well. All our teams, the wine team, bar team, kitchen team, has just been absolutely fantastic. Everything's going very well. Every week we're getting steadily busier and busier. We're getting, from what I can tell, a very good name for ourselves. We're a lot of the press like us, the public like us. We've got a lot of good online feedback going on in all aspects. And people are just liking what we're doing. They're coming in and just having really good food, really good drinks. Our location's beautiful. Our view is phenomenal. And yeah, it's. I guess we couldn't be happy right now, to be honest. It's going really well.
I wanted to say that I think that has been really well received as well, just for the people in the area. As far as the Sawyer Yards and the Sawyer Heights area and that art district, that Washington corridor, that people are feeling as though they have a restaurant that they can go to that is not, you don't have to be too dressed up, but you can come in and feel relaxed and come in for a happy hour if you want to make it quick, or you can come in for a date night or whatever it is that you want to do, but it's within reason and within that small area. And I had a gentleman tell me last night from the Chamber of Commerce, he said, man, like, this is just what this area needed, like a place like this where you can come out and sit on the patio, and like he had his son in his arms, and you know, while he has his glass of wine, and he's just like enjoying the space and just having a good time.
Yeah, and I should note, I mean, that patio has that great view of the downtown skyline. I mean, even though it's hot outside, I sort of suspect you're seeing a bunch of people that want to sit out there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it's really hot outside. Not many people are sitting out there up till about like 6:30-ish. But from then on, yeah, for sure. I mean, the view is just phenomenal. And we've quite a bit of shade out there as well, so we've done some stuff to make it a little bit more comfortable for people out there. But yeah, the view is, I mean, again, I'm relatively new to Houston. I haven't been in every restaurant in the city with a view, but from what I can see, it's one of the best views of downtown in any restaurant in town, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty phenomenal. Dominic, it's your first time being an executive chef. You didn't start out with like a, you know, 50-seat, 2,500-square-foot, you know, little neighborhood spot. I mean, you've got what, like 150 seats in there probably?
Yeah, 402 seats.
Yeah.
Even bigger.
Times three. but true, if you're going to – if it that space, though, it seems big, but to me it doesn't seem as big as when you say it that way. When you're like, oh, it's 9,600 square feet. It's like, wow, that's a massive place, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's by, you know, anything that's not a steakhouse, that's a very large, by Houston standards, it's a very large restaurant.
We've split it up very nicely, though. You know, again, going back to our kind of setting with our bar and our restaurant, we've so many different areas. We've like lots of seats at the bar, lots of high tables, and then a main dining room. We have a really large private dining room, a couple of semi-private rooms, our patio. So it's spaced out very nice. So as Dominic said, when you're in there, and even if it's a Monday and there's 100 or 200 people in there, it doesn't feel empty. It still feels nicely solid.
Yeah, I mean, just from like a workflow standpoint, I mean, when you guys are really humming on a Friday or Saturday, I mean, what's that like kind of keeping up with the ticket times and getting the food out to people?
It's fun.
Yeah, that. And also you had to really, with the menu, we had to definitely think that all the way through as far as the way that the dishes would be executed and how to get them out at a proper timing. And if now our menu is divided into two sections, which is small and large plates. So as people are coming in, like most of the small plates, if they're ordered all together, we'll send them out as ready. And it just makes it for a more smooth service. And the food is getting out and people are eating. And I mean, and once it gets crazy, I mean, it gets crazy. But it's not, you're not going to come in and it's not going to be, you know, waiting 20 minutes for anything. You know, you have food in front of you, you're eating, you're enjoying, and it doesn't feel crowded, you know, like a bunch of people packed in one place. It's just a very nice feel. And I think that my initial thought was like, well, 400. I said, Kieran's was 200 plus. Like, I tell people all the time, I've worked every service in Kieran's from when it was the friends and family until the day that I left. And it was, you know, it would be crazy some nights, and that's just the restaurant business. You know, so I was like, what's another 100?
You want it to be crazy.
Yeah, well, I was like, what's another?
If it's not crazy, you know, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I was like, what's another 120 seats? It's not a big deal. Be all right.
Ian, do you have a kind of vision for how you want the restaurant to evolve? I mean, are you starting to get a sense kind of what people do and don't like and kind of how you'd like to improve things as you go forward?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly still finding our feet in that regard. Like, as Dominic said, we have changed the menu layouts a little bit already. We definitely want to promote the sharing communal aspect of a lot of our food. The fact that the menu is so eclectic and diverse, we want people to come in and sample a bunch of different flavors from different places. So doing that small plates, large plates concept is working really well, especially with the small plates, because people are just going family style on all of them and really sampling it. So we've evolved that way a little bit. And I mean, we're still kind of just taking stock, to be honest, and see where the wind takes us, I guess. We're going to be extremely seasonal in everything we do, drinks and food. So I guess the next kind of change in that regard will come in another couple of months towards the end of the summer.
Yeah, Dominic, I know you're a big farmers market shopper. I mean, what are you utilizing right now that's kind of local that you're really excited about?
So currently, we literally just switched from fried green tomatoes to okra. Because, you know, green tomatoes more like early spring as the tomatoes are first planted. So, but okra is a full summer dish or a summer veg. So we're using okra. Also, we have mixed summer squash and mixed eggplant from Engle Farms that I use as my charred vegetable. And then from there, we'll have like different types of tomatoes. I was literally in the lobby going over the farm to table thing, like placing an order of the just different stuff. Like they have like rose fin potatoes and Yukon gold potatoes and purple. It's a purple Peruvian potato from one of these farms. Like I have it actually pulled up right now because I was going through it. It's the, I have to tell you now because I want to know myself.
one of the great things Dominic's doing in the kitchen is that supporting local aspect. Like
Buena Tierra, I'm sorry.
Buena Tierra.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because I don't think, you know, every chef that buys local produce doesn't always talk about how much local produce they buy, because I think at this point, diners have come to sort of expect that, like...
True, but to the extent that Chef Dominic is doing it is pretty spectacular. I mean, as you just said, he's a big purveyor of the farmer's market. I mean, even though we're now rolling at the restaurant, he's there every Saturday morning. He knows all the farmers by name, knows things about them, their lives, their families. Like, if he's not at the market, they're hand-delivering stuff to us. We've got, like, a mobile fruit guy that comes by.
The Covey Rise Farms.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, they... You get, I mean, technically Louisiana, so, but like, I mean, I remember having Covey Rice strawberries in season that are like maybe the best strawberries I've ever had.
It's more, and not just with the local, but more so just the going direct to producer. That's the real key. Just going direct.
I don't want to get started on Louisiana's strawberries because we'll be going there all day. But those strawberries just come from Ponchatoula. And that's all I'm going to say. They have a strawberry festival. Strawberries is what those people do. They're really, really, really good at it. And it's that's all I'm going to say. Like, you know, those are the kind of strawberries you don't need to add sugar to. You know, they like feel like they've already been macerated when you eat them.
Well, it just so often you go to the grocery store and you buy a pint of strawberries and they don't taste like anything. And it's rotten.
Yeah.
You just feel cheated.
Yeah. And then you have those and you're like, where have these been my entire life?
Right. Why don't all strawberries taste like this?
Yeah, definitely. I can understand that. But I think that's like a big part of the farm to table movement is that when you have those vegetables or fruits or meats that come from a specific farmer or someone who truly loved the product, then you can taste the difference. And I think that in order for our food to have the layers of flavor that we're trying to incite, that you need to have that level of care put into it. And when they bring it in, it's like, you know, you look at it and you're like, this is amazing. You know, this is like you did this. Like, I thank you for your contribution to what it is that we're going to do. You know, I mean, it's the only way I can see it.
And then so the one other thing I want to ask you about your new role is what's it like leading the team instead of being like a cog in the machine?
It's very fun. And also it's I would say that it's about teaching, because all of the things that you've learned from the mentors that you've had, now you have to be able to express them to other people who look to you in order to lead them and to answer their questions and to teach them your way or the way that things should be done and how it should be done properly. And I think that's the biggest change, is that now you're no longer asking questions but answering the questions. And it's also like a form of, you know, knowing everything that's going on. So, you know every piece of every part of the puzzle, so that when someone asks you a question, it's like that. You know everything, that's every piece of everything, you know.
And then, you know, I don't want to neglect the rest of your team. I mean, you hired a pretty veteran crew to run the front of the house and the bar program and the wine and everything.
Yeah, but we needed to. I mean, as we touched on, it's a very large space and we have a lot going on. We have a lot of different aspects of the business that and we're proud of all the different aspects, if you know what I mean. It's not just the food, it's the cocktails, it's the wine, it's all of it. And again, going back to me only being here less than 3 years now, I needed a team that knew the city well, and that knew the people here well and what to offer the people here. So we have a fantastic team, and it's all about the team. And as far as I'm concerned, every business, no matter what industry you're in, it's all about the team.
So how do you balance kind of, you obviously started this business, you have a clear vision of kind of what you want to do and how you want to serve, with hiring these creative people and letting them do their thing?
Yeah, absolutely. But I kind of had the vision of the overall vision of what we wanted to create. Like, the vibe, the layout, the atmosphere, the feeling, the general offering, the service aspect and the way we're going to treat our clientele. But then when you hire the team and each of them has their own responsibilities in terms of food, cocktails, wine, whatever it might be, I want them to have ownership over it, because then they'll be proud of it. Just like with Dominic, yeah, we spoke about the direction for the menu, but the menu's all him and his team. It's all them. Yeah. I've no, there's no nothing on the menu that I said, hey, I want this on the menu. That just wouldn't happen.
Because you're not like, there has to be a steak on the menu, or there has to be...
No, absolutely not, because, again, I want Dominic and his team to be really proud of what they're producing, and it's only if it's their stuff will they be proud. And it's the same in the bar. It's the bar team's cocktails. It's our sommelier's wine program, very much her wine program. And that just gives them all much more of a sense of ownership over it, and also development, so that hopefully everything goes well and we look to do something else in the future, that everyone then has even more knowledge and is in a better place to do that and stay together and do it together.
I think that one of the biggest things that may not seem like a big deal, but it is that when you read our menu, all of the menus, either the wine program or the cocktail program or the food menu, you see all of the names of the people who are involved. And it says, you know, what their specific duty is. And I think that that also puts a level of ownership on something that people are now like, when they associate a specific thing, they associate it with that person. And it says like, hey, you made this, you know, the public knows that you made this. So you own this, you know?
Yeah. And I was just at Anvil last night trying some of their new summer cocktails, and each drink on the menu has the name of the bartender who created the drink. And so I think you're really onto something with that, because, you know, there's a pride and an ownership and also like a personal relationship. It's like,
completely.
Oh, make me your drink from the menu, or make me your dish from the menu.
Yeah, for sure. Like, as for the guest experience, when I'm a guest in places like that, yeah, same thing. I'm sitting at the bar and I find out the bartender's name, and he tells me like, oh, wow, okay, so that's your drink. Yeah, you created that. You know, it just gives that, as you said, that personal relationship.
But also think about it. If I was at a place, let's just say Anvil, for instance, and I had the drink that a bartender made and another bartender is making it, and the person is watching them make their drink wrong or messing it up, they're going to say, hey, man, that's not how you make that, you know?
Right.
It's going to be some correction going on. It's just like that personal pride about the way something that you have done is presented.
Right. I mean, you all have to kind of support each other so exactly. that, you know, even if it's not your dish or your drink, it still has to be made to the standard of the person who created it. You're all kind of accountable to each other.
Exactly. And that's why I really find it the most important to have even all of the sous chef's names on the menu, because now it's no longer like, oh, this is just Chef Dominic's food. No, it's everyone's food. It's not just mine, you know? And so I never wanted the kitchen to be where people are like, oh, we just make his food. No, we make our food. You know, it's all of our food, you know, so we need to take pride in it. You know, I think that makes a big difference.
Ian, you alluded to the idea that maybe there will be additional projects in the future. do you have like a timeline for that, or are you just kind of sitting
tight? Absolutely not.
Okay.
No, I have way too much going on right now. We all do. We're 6 weeks into a 400-seat restaurant and bar. I've got Balls Out Burger. I've got a 11-month-old. I've got enough going on. I've got enough going on right now.
Yeah,
definitely that's the plan, but no timeline at all.
And how is Balls Out Burger doing?
Good. Yeah, good. It's going good. And our food truck's doing really well. Food truck's on the road all the time. Lunch and dinner every day. And we're building a nice little solid following, I think. It's good.
Well, that really brings me to the end of my questions, unless you guys have another topic you want to hit.
I can't think of one right now. Just getting ready for July 4th.
July 4th on our patio.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be banging.
Yeah, well, not so much on our patio. We're actually, what we decided to do is we're actually not taking reservations on the patio for dinner at all. We're just doing all inside reservations, and we're going to set up our patio just very much lounge bar style and just put some high tables out there, and people can wander in and out and head out and watch the fireworks. And that's what we're doing, yeah. But even with all our windows inside, it's going to be hopefully the weather's good. It's going to be a pretty good evening.
I'm thinking low country boil.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun.
He's like, that's what my mind was. I was talking to Ian in the lobby. I was like, I think we should do a seafood boil.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yeah. Get people together, get a meeting together. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's what I said. That'll be a nice July 4th thing. Fireworks and a low country boil.
Well, you've never said on the radio, so I guess we're doing a low country boil.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think you're committed.
That's exactly why I did that. So now it's locked in. You know, people are like, They're going to start calling later on and be like, hey, I heard y'all doing a Low Country Boil for July on July 4th. Like, can I make a res for that? Like, yeah. So
yes, you can.
Exactly.
And just tell people what a Low Country Boil is in case someone doesn't know.
So a Low Country Boil is, in Louisiana, we would call it a crawfish boil. But, you know, a Low Country Boil is basically just boiled seafood. From, you know, it originated, that term originated in like Charleston and Virginia and stuff like that. But it's just basically a seafood boil. You have crabs or crawfish or potatoes and corn and stuff like that. And you're having beer and you're just having a good time, you know?
Yeah. Sounds like a great way to ring in July 4th.
Yeah. That's for me, seeing, like I said, Louisiana, we just say crawfish boil and that just, everything falls under the gamut, but there's a better term. That is all around recognized.
Low Country Boil.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I always wrap this interview up with something I call the lightning round.
Okay, lightning round.
Five easy questions, five short answers. Ian has already done it, so Dominic, these questions are for you.
Okay, I'm ready, I think.
What's the name of the first restaurant you ever worked at?
The first restaurant I ever worked at was a country club in New Orleans called the New Orleans Country Club. Or if we go back one, it would be Burger King in high school after Hurricane Katrina. They were paying bonus checks and $12 an hour.
It's a solid wage at a Burger King.
Absolutely.
What's the first band you ever saw in concert?
First band that I ever saw in concert was Ozzy Osbourne and Rob Zombie with my mother. It's nice. Radical time.
Nice. What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a drive-thru.
Oh, absolutely. Sonic all day.
and so close to the restaurant.
Exactly. Sonic all day.
Who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Oh, it would be, is Clyde the Glide Drexler?
100%.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that I said that correctly. Yeah, definitely.
And then where's your favorite place to get a taco?
Favorite place to get a taco? It would be Mia Terra, or is it like Terra something? It's like right there.
Tierra Caliente next to the West Alabama Ice House?
Exactly. That, like, legit lingua, yeah. You know, for $1.50, you get about five tacos. You know, I mean, I don't hold anything back. You know, so,
no,
yeah.
it's a very popular answer to that question.
Yeah, definitely.
Ian, give us the website and the Instagram and all that stuff.
It's all Putching Houston. So the Instagram, Twitter, all that is at Putching Houston, and the website's PutchingHouston.com. And Putching is P-O-I-T-I-N. Yeah. You never actually asked me what Putching is.
Putching, oh, well.
You tell me, Eric. I've told you.
Putching is an Irish spirit, unaged whiskey, as I recall.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's the oldest distilled beverage in the world.
So what is the most creative mispronunciation of Putching that you've heard since you opened the restaurant?
Honestly, not a huge amount of variations, but definitely everyone calls it Poitin. That seems to be the standard.
I get Potion.
Potion? I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, I got that plenty of times.
Poitin is the most common one.
I like Potion.
All right.
That's a good one.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having us.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler, on Twitter at eSandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I will be back in 2 weeks, taking a little bit of a summer break. But yeah, I'll be back soon. Thanks.